Chapter 30. Come back, Mr. Nickleby, do. ... cried Miss Price, affecting alarm at her friend's threat, but really actuated by a malicious wish to hear what Nicholas would say. Come back, Mr. Nickleby. ... Mr. Nickleby came back, and looked as confused as might be, as he inquired whether the ladies had any commands for him. Don't stop to talk, ... urged Miss Price, hastily, but support her on the other side. How do you feel now, dear? ... Better, ... sighed Miss Squeers, laying a beaver bonnet of a reddish brown with a green veil attached, on Mr. Nickleby's shoulder. This foolish faintness. ... Don't call it foolish, dear, ... said Miss Price, her bright eye dancing with merriment as she saw the perplexity of Nicholas. You have no reason to be ashamed of it. It's those who are too proud to come round again, without all this to do, that ought to be ashamed. ... You are resolved to fix it upon me, I see, ... said Nicholas, smiling, although I told you, last night, it was not my fault. ... There. He says it was not his fault, my dear, ... remarked the wicked Miss Price. Perhaps you were too jealous, or too hasty with him. He says it was not his fault. You hear, I think that's apology enough. ... You will not understand me, ... said Nicholas. Pray dispense with this jesting, for I have no time, and really no inclination, to be the subject or promoter of mirth just now. ... What do you mean? ... asked Miss Price, affecting amazement. Don't ask him, Tilda, ... cried Miss Squeers. I forgive him. ... Dear me, ... said Nicholas, as the brown bonnet went down on his shoulder again. This is more serious than I supposed. Allow me. Will you have the goodness to hear me speak? ... Here he raised up the brown bonnet, and regarding with most unfeigned astonishment a look of tender reproach from Miss Squeers, shrunk back a few paces, to be out of the reach of the fair burden, and went on to say, I am very sorry, truly and sincerely sorry for having been the cause of any difference among you, last night. I reproach myself, most bitterly, for having been so unfortunate, as to cause the dissension that occurred, although I did so, I assure you, most unwittingly and heedlessly. ... Well, that's not all you have got to say, surely, ... exclaimed Miss Price as Nicholas paused. I fear there is something more, ... stammered Nicholas with a half smile, and looking towards Miss Squeers. It is a most awkward thing to say, but the very mention of such a supposition makes one look like a puppy. Still, may I ask, if that lady supposes that I entertain any, in short, does she think that I am in love with her? ... Delightful embarrassment, ... thought Miss Squeers, I have brought him to it, at last. Answer for me, dear, ... she whispered to her friend. Does she think so? ... rejoined Miss Price. Of course she does. ... she does. ... exclaimed Nicholas with such energy of utterance as might have been, for the moment, mistaken for rapture. Certainly, ... replied Miss Price, if Mr. Nickleby has doubted that, ... said the blushing Miss Squeers in soft accents, he may set his mind at rest. His sentiments are reciprocal. ... cried Nicholas hurriedly. Pray hear me. This is the grossest and wildest delusion, the completest and most signal mistake, that ever human being labored under, or committed. I have scarcely seen the young lady half a dozen times, but if I had seen her 60 times, or am destined to see her 60,000, it would be, and will be, precisely the same. I have not one thought, wish, or hope, connected with her, unless it be, and I say this, not to hurt her feelings, but to impress her with the real state of my own, unless it be the one object, dear to my heart as life itself, of being one day able to turn my back upon this accursed place, never to set foot in it again, or think of it, but with loathing and disgust. apostrophe, with this particularly plain and straightforward declaration, which he made with all the vehemence that his indignant and excited feelings could bring to bear upon it, Nicholas, waiting to hear no more, retreated. But poor Miss Squeers! Her anger, rage, and vexation, the rapid succession of bitter and passionate feelings that whirled through her mind, are not to be described. Refused. Refused by a teacher, picked up by advertisement, at an annual salary of £5 payable at indefinite periods, and found in food and lodging like the very boys themselves, and this too in the presence of a little chit of a miller's daughter of 18, who was going to be married, in 3 weeks' time, to a man who had gone down on his very knees to ask her. She could have choked in right good earnest, at the thought of being so humbled. But, there was one thing clear in the midst of her mortification, and that was, that she hated and detested Nicholas with all the narrowness of mind and littleness of purpose worthy a descendant of the house of Squeers. And there was one comfort too, and that was, that every hour in every day she could wound his pride, and goad him with the infliction of some slight, or insult, or deprivation, which could not, but have some effect on the most insensible person, and must be acutely felt by one so sensitive as Nicholas. With these two reflections uppermost in her mind, Miss Squeers made the best of the matter to her friend, by observing that Mr. Nickleby was such an odd creature, and of such a violent temper, that she feared she should be obliged to give him up, and parted from her. And here it may be remarked, that Miss Squeers, having bestowed her affections, or whatever it might be that, in the absence of anything better, represented them, on Nicholas Nickleby, had never once seriously contemplated the possibility of his being of a different opinion from herself in the business. Miss Squeers reasoned, that she was prepossessing and beautiful, and that her father was master, a Nicholas man, and that her father had saved money, and Nicholas had none, all of which seemed to her conclusive arguments, why the young man should feel only too much honored by her preference. She had not failed to recollect either, how much more agreeable she could render his situation, if she were his friend, and how much more disagreeable, if she were his enemy. And, doubtless, many less scrupulous young gentlemen than Nicholas would have encouraged her extravagance had it been only for this very obvious and intelligible reason. However, he had thought proper to do otherwise, and Miss Squeers was outrageous. Let him see, apostrophe said the irritated young lady, when she had regained her own room, and eased her mind, by committing an assault on Fib, if I don't set mother against him a little more when she comes back. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it was scarcely necessary to do this, but Miss Squeers was as good as her word. And poor Nicholas, in addition to bad food, dirty lodging, and the being compelled to witness one dull unvarying round of squalid misery, was treated with every special indignity that malice could suggest, or the most grasping cupidity put upon him. Nor was this all. There was another and deeper system of annoyance which made his heart sink, and nearly drove him wild, by its injustice and cruelty. The wretched creature, Smike, since the night Nicholas had spoken kindly to him in the schoolroom, had followed him to and fro, with an ever restless desire, to serve or help him, anticipating such little wants as his humble ability could supply, and content only to be near him. He would sit beside him for hours, looking patiently into his face, and a word would brighten up his careworn visage, and call into it a passing gleam, even of happiness. He was an altered being, he had an object now, and that object was, to show his attachment to the only person, that person a stranger who had treated him, not to say with kindness, but like a human creature. Upon this poor being, all the spleen and ill humor that could not be vented on Nicholas were unceasingly bestowed. Drudgery would have been nothing. Smike was well used to that. Buffetings inflicted without cause would have been equally a matter of course, for to them also he had served a long and weary apprenticeship. But it was no sooner observed that he had become attached to Nicholas than stripes and blows. Stripes and blows, morning, noon, and night, were his only portion. Squeers was jealous of the influence which his man had so soon acquired, and his family hated him, and Smike paid for both. Nicholas saw it, and ground his teeth at every repetition of the savage and cowardly attack. He had arranged a few regular lessons for the boys, and one night, as he paced up and down the dismal schoolroom, his swollen heart almost bursting to think that his protection and countenance should have increased the misery of the wretched being whose peculiar destitution had awakened his pity, he paused mechanically in a dark corner where sat the object of his thoughts. The poor soul was poring hard over a tattered book, with the traces of recent tears still upon his face, vainly endeavoring to master some task which a child of 9 years old, possessed of ordinary powers, could have conquered with ease, but which, to the addled brain of the crushed boy of 19, was a sealed and hopeless mystery. Yet there he sat, patiently conning the page again and again, stimulated by no boyish ambition, for he was the common jest and scoff even of the uncouth objects that congregated about him, but inspired by the one eager desire to please his solitary friend. Nicholas laid his hand upon his shoulder. "I can't do it," apostrophe said the dejected creature, looking up with bitter disappointment in every feature. "No, no. Apostrophe, do not try," apostrophe replied Nicholas. The boy shook his head, and closing the book with a sigh, looked vacantly round, and laid his head upon his arm. He was weeping. "Do not, for God's sake," apostrophe said Nicholas, in an agitated voice. "I cannot bear to see you." Apostrophe, "they are more hard with me than ever," apostrophe sobbed the boy. "I know it," apostrophe rejoined Nicholas. "They are," apostrophe, "but for you," apostrophe said the outcast, "I should die. They would kill me, they would, I know they would." Apostrophe, "you will do better, poor fellow," apostrophe replied Nicholas, shaking his head mournfully, "when I am gone." Apostrophe, "gone." Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the other, looking intently in his face. "Softly." Apostrophe, apostrophe, rejoined Nicholas. "Yes." Apostrophe, "are you going?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, demanded the boy, in an earnest whisper. "I cannot say," apostrophe replied Nicholas. "I was speaking more to my own thoughts than to you." Apostrophe, "tell me," apostrophe said the boy imploringly, "oh do tell me, will you go, will you?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "I shall be driven to that at last." Apostrophe, apostrophe said Nicholas. "The world is before me, after all." Apostrophe, "tell me," apostrophe urged Smike, "is the world as bad and dismal as this place?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "heaven forbid," apostrophe replied Nicholas, pursuing the train of his own thoughts. "Its hardest, coarsest toil, were happiness to this." Apostrophe, "should I ever meet you there?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, demanded the boy, speaking with unusual wildness and volubility. "Yes," apostrophe replied Nicholas, willing to soothe him. "No, no," apostrophe, apostrophe said the other, clasping him by the hand. Should I tell me that again? Say I should be sure to find you." Apostrophe, "you would," apostrophe replied Nicholas, with the same humane intention, "and I would help and aid you, and not bring fresh sorrow on you as I have done here." Apostrophe, the boy caught both the young man's hands passionately in his, and, hugging them to his breast, uttered a few broken sounds which were unintelligible. Squeers entered at the moment, and he shrunk back into his old corner. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.